Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, The Marriage of Krishna and Rukmini, chapter 54, text number 13. Sure sattha dasaham bhai.
Sure sattha dasaham bhai.
Samyugani parajita.
Samyugani parajita.
Trayo vimsati bhishanya.
Trayo vimsati bhishanya.
Jigyarikam aham bharam. Sattadasaham bhai.
Sattadasaham bhai.
Samyugani parajita.
Samyugani parajita.
Trayo vimsati bhisanya.
Trayo vimsati bhisanya.
Jigyarikam aham param.
Jigyarikam aham param.
Sure sattadasaham bhai. Samyugani parajita.
Samyugani parajita.
Trayo vimsati bhisanya.
Trayo vimsati bhisanya.
Jigyarikam aham param.
Jigyarikam aham param.
Saure satta dasaham vai.
Saure satta dasaham vai.
Samyugani parajita.
Samyugani parajita.
Sore
sapta saham vai.
Samyugani parajita.
Samyugani parajita.
Trayo vimsati bhisanya.
Trayo vimsati bhisanya.
Jigye ikam aham param.
Jigye ikam aham param.
Sore sapta dasaham vai.
Sore sapta dasaham vai.
Samyugani parajita.
Samyugani parajita.
Trayo vimsati bhisanya.
Trayo vimsati bhisanya.
Jigye ekam aham param.
Jigye ekam aham param.
Sure sattva dasaham vai.
Samyugani parajita.
Sure. With Krishna.
Saptadas.
17.
Aham.
I.
Vai.
Indeed.
Samyugani.
Battles.
Parajita.
Lost.
Traya
vimsatipi.
23.
Sanyai. With armies.
Jighe.
One.
Hekam.
One. So the first one was one as in winning something, and the second one as hekam, one as in unit. Aham.
I.
Param.
Only.
Translation. So this is Charasandha speaking. In battle with Krishna, I and my 23 armies lost 17 times. Only once did I defeat him. Purport. Jarasandha offers his own life as an example of the inevitable happiness and distress of this material world. So, who's been following the story? Who can describe what has happened so far. Any takers on the mother's side? Rasa?
Krishna had been under siege at Dwarka.
Krishna was under siege at Dwarka, yeah.
Oh, no, he was under siege, so he went to Dwarka.
He went to Dwarka, yeah. Rukmini had been hearing about Krishna. I'm repeating it in the microphone just in case no one's listening yet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So Rukmini had been hearing about Krishna and had dedicated her life to him.
Yes, Rukmini dedicated her life to Krishna, yes.
And written as much.
Written a letter to Krishna, sent it through a brahmana.
So Krishna had accepted her and stolen her away.
Yes, Krishna came and accepted Rukmini and stole her away from. She was supposed to marry Sisapal, of course, and she was stolen away by Krishna.
And Jarasandha was a friend of the man she was stolen
from. Yes, Jarasandha was Sisapal's friend and supporter, yeah. So here, Jarasandha. So what has happened here, of course, is that they have been defeated. So Krishna, Rukmini has sent a letter to Krishna through a brahmana saying, I want to marry you and dedicate my life to you. Please don't let me be married to Sisapal as my elder brother Rukmi is trying to arrange by force against my will. So Krishna accepted that proposal and he came to the city, and at the when Rukmini was before the wedding, she approaches the temple of Durga and offers prayers. Of course, she was praying, please, you know, praying to the demigods, please fulfill my desire and let Krishna come and kidnap me and so that I can be his wife. And when she was coming out of the temple, then Krishna took the opportunity and grabbed Rukmini, took her up on his chariot and took off. Like that. So it's a very not many people have a story to tell about their wedding like that. Some people do. I saw a documentary a while ago about an explorer somewhere back in the 1800s, I think, and he was travelling through Africa, and there was a woman who'd actually been kidnapped by the natives, and he actually rescued her from a life of slavery. Literally, she was like a slave, and they became married and travelled around Africa. They were great explorers, searching for all the uncharted rivers. So this is the Kshatriya spirit, very sporting. Mm-hmm. generally, you know, sometimes these days, you know, people might go to a hotel and some of us shout them a drink and, you know, one thing leads to another, next thing they're married. But so anyway, Krishna, being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everything, every single aspect, every little detail is super wonderful, super excellent. Every detail, every aspect, everything he did was just, you know, nothing less than what you'd expect from the Supreme Lord, and everything more than you could hope for. There are some imitation gods, people who claim that I am Krishna and I am Ram. And, you know, we see their activities, and this is just one pastime. This you know, even if we only knew this one pastime, that would be enough. But, you know, we have so many pastimes of Krishna. And Krishna's devotees and Krishna's incarnations, it's unlimited. And we see these imitation gods these days, their activities are very boring, very insignificant. Sometimes, you know, once or twice throughout the duration of their life, they may do something a little magical, and that's it, end of story. And they usually play on that one thing throughout their life. Right? So sometimes you hear people like, you know, Sai Bhagavan and what have you, you know. Maybe once they made a little bit of ash in their hands, or a little bit of gold or something. And for the rest of their life, oh, you know, he did this with the ash. Right. Anything else? No, that was it. But he's very good now at sneaking watches from under pillows and giving them. Oh, that's you know, getting close to being God, I guess.
Under the sleeve.
Yeah. So, you know, he's got quite a portfolio there, but not quite God. So, these pastimes of Krishna are very, very exciting. So, when Krishna took off with Rukmini, and then actually, no one tells this story like Srila Prabhupada. If you read Krishna book, it is really enjoyable. And Srila Prabhupada describes how, you know, first, of course, the soldiers had to get off the ground before they jumped on their horses, because they'd fallen off their horses and their elephants. Because when they looked at Rukmini, she was so beautiful that they just fell off their horses, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like,
unconscious.
What's that? And elephants and, you know, all their weapons. These are like great noble warriors. And you know, there they are sprawling on the ground, you know, with their mouths wide open, you know, drooling. So another name for Rukmini is Ruchiranana, which means that she has a beautiful face that expands like a lotus flower. Very, very beautiful. She's exceptionally beautiful. And so, of course, you know, once they'd picked themselves off the ground and gathered their weapons and looked around, well, I hope no one was watching that, and they, you know, gallantly jumped back on their horses and their elephants, they took off after Krishna. And Rukmini was watching, seeing all these soldiers come, and they were showering, you know, the weapons, like it's described, like, you know, rain upon a mountain. And Rukmini, of course, was feeling sorry that she had put Krishna into such trouble for her. And, you know, here she sees it, oh, you know, I've sent this letter and asked Krishna to come and marry me, and now look what I've done to him and the Yadus, that this huge army is about to, you know, come down upon them. And but Krishna, you know, he smiled at her and put her at ease. You know, your soldiers, so Krishna's whole Yadu army, and now your soldiers, they will, you know, and myself, we will quickly sort this situation out. So they defeated all of the kings, and, you know, the again, as Srila Prabhupada describes, there were arms on arms and legs on legs, and, you know, bodies on bodies and horses on horses, are just piles and piles of, you know, bodies and parts of bodies spread, you know. They really annihilated them. So, you know, some of the kings, you know, they were thinking, well, you know, really, Jarasandha himself, it is his wife, or wife was his wife to be, he should have really just taken Krishna and his soldiers, himself with him and his army. You know, we're fighting for him, but we're looking at Sisipal and we're seeing that he's really quite incompetent. And they were thinking, well, you know, I don't think we're going to risk our life for, you know, someone like Sisipal. So they decided to call it quits, and, you know, And they went to Sisipal, and Jarasandha here is speaking to Sisipal and trying to, you know, cheer him up, because Sisipal, of course, is feeling very, very depressed. You know, he had his mind set on marrying Rukmini, who he knew everybody wanted Rukmini to marry Krishna. Everybody in the kingdom. And he thought, I am so envious of Krishna. I will marry, you know, Rukmini, who is actually meant for him like this. And so he has been humiliated. And on top of that, then he has been defeated. All his armies, because the Yadu army, they weren't actually so big in comparison to this huge band of armies that, you know, chased after them. So it's quite a humiliating defeat. So Jarasandha addressed him as, "O lion among men." That's what you do when someone's really, you know, depressed and they've made a real fool of themselves, and, you know, you just try and puff them up a bit. No, you're a really great person. You know, just look at all the things you've done. And, you know, so, you know, they're trying to, you know, straighten him up and put a bit of a smile back on his face. So Jarasandha is speaking here, and then he's speaking even, you know, a little bit of philosophy, saying that, O tiger among men, give up your depression. After all, embodied beings, happiness and unhappiness is never seen to be permanent, O king. Addressing him again, so twice, you know, once a lion among men, another time addressing him as king, you know, getting as many sort of, you know, enthusing words in there like that. But, you know, describing that, as we all do, you know, when there's some terrible thing, you know, happens to us, or when we go through very difficult times, if we understand that it is temporary, it makes it so much more easier to endure that situation. A lot of people, especially people who do, you know, maybe commit suicide or, you know, have, you know, really go into deep depression, they have that inability to understand that what they're going through is temporary. You know, it will, you know, come to an end at some stage. For some, because there is a lot of suffering in this life, it may be when they die. For some people, actually, they, you know, their whole life is really a lot of suffering. But you know, for generally, for most people, we see that there is some suffering and there is some, you know, intermittent happiness like that. I know when I speak to people who smoke cigarettes, and I give them the advice that, you know, people think that they can't give up smoking cigarettes because they think, I've got to go through these cravings and I just can't get through, you know, like a couple of weeks. And I say to them, well, you don't actually have to get through a couple of weeks. You have to get through about 5 minutes, because that's how long a craving usually lasts. Craving, if you get through the 5 minutes, you're right, and then a few hours down the track, it'll hit you again. So you don't, if you're thinking, I can't make 2 weeks, then they think, I'll never give up. But if they're thinking, oh, I can last 5 minutes, so then they think, okay, yeah, well, I can do it, like that. So, you know, this is the same sort of tack that Jarasandha has taken with Sisipal, that, you know, well, you'll be really miserable now. It's okay, you know. And then he says, you know, just as a puppet in the form of a woman dances by the desire of a puppeteer, so this world, controlled by the Supreme Lord, struggles in both happiness and misery. So then he explains there that, you know, this happiness and distress, everybody in this world, it's not just you, Jarasandha, everybody is, you know, dancing just like a puppeteer. You know, there's sometimes happiness, sometimes distress, according to the will of the Lord. You know, and, you know, what can you do? That is the way time is working. And he then gives his own, here, giving an example of his own life, In battle with Krishna, I and my 23 armies lost 17 times. Only once did I defeat them. So here Jarasandha, you know, is saying, well, Sisipal, you think you've got something to be, you know, sad about? Take a walk in my shoes. You know, there's that saying that I once complained about having no shoes until I met a man who had no feet. You know, sometimes I know I do that also sometimes, especially with children, with my children. Sometimes, you know, when they, you put in a nice meal, you get a lot of trouble, you cook a nice meal, you put it out on the table, and I don't want this. You know, it's a nice meal. And they get a bit fussy, and you know, they turn on the waterworks, and you know, oh, I'm not eating broccoli, you know, whatever. And you know, you explain to them that, you know, a huge majority of people in this world get a bit hungry every night. You know, if they saw what we had on our table, you know, that they would remember that for years to come. Remember that time we had that meal? You know, it's all, you know, it'd be like a lifetime occasion for them. So, again, you know, in this way, Jarasandha is, you know, trying to pick up the mood of Sisipal that, you know, 17 times Krishna wiped out 23 entire armies that I had in 17 battles. Only once, because Jarasandha thinks that he won, because that must have been the time that Krishna, you know, left the battlefield. Jarasandha is thinking he's won, but ultimately, Krishna is really just rolling up his sleeves for Jarasandha to give him a big, you know, punch. But he doesn't want to do it himself. He's going to do it through Bhima. Ultimately, Bhima. He wants Bhima to take the glory of killing a powerful king like Jarasandha. So we see that. So these very nice pastimes. This is the life of the devotees, that they relish these, you know, wonderful pastimes in so many different ways. And they enjoy developing a similar relationship. So we're reading about this pastime, but it's not just dry philosophy that we read it. We actually read about this pastime and then we try to develop a relationship with Krishna following in the footsteps of such great personalities as Rukmini. So in our daily lives, you know, that is our constant meditation internally. One time when Srila Prabhupada was in Montreal, I think it was. I think it was 1968. And he was initiating Bhakti Wendy. And he said, so your name will be Rukmini Devi Dasi. And then he said, and one day you may be kidnapped by Krishna too. So, you know, that was Srila Prabhupada's expectation, you know, that he really, you know, one day Krishna, you know, in some universe, if you become Krishna conscious and Krishna is ready to take you back to the spiritual world, before you go back to the spiritual world, you may take birth in a universe where Krishna will kidnap you in this, you know, and you will be on the chariots, and as you know, perhaps like Rukmini, you may also grab the reins of the chariot fearlessly while Krishna fights the battle with his bow and arrows. So So then Srila Prabhupada was actually, then immediately he began to tell the story very nicely of Rukmini. And he said, just see, so nice, We take prasadam, we hear, these Krishna katha, just see, And he says, what is this nonsense, aham brahmasmi? I am Brahman, I am spirit. He says, saying that, there is not much difference between saying, I am stone or I am wood. It is a very impersonal existence. In many, throughout India, generally when people take to yoga, they have some complete impersonal concept. Like I was talking to someone at the farm feast on last Sunday, and they were they went to the Brahma Kumaris, who they meditate upon an oval light, effulgent oval light, and that's their meditation. And I said to the lady, I'd probably last about 2 minutes meditating on an oval light, and I'd get really bored. I just don't know that I could do that for very long. It just doesn't sound very exciting, does it? We've all seen a light globe on, there's a light globe up there. So what do? You just look at this light. I explained to her that actually, unless there's some real spiritual taste in your yoga and your meditation, you'll not actually lose your attraction for the material world. If you join the Brahma Kumaris and you meditate, try and empty your mind out so that there's nothing, which is practically impossible, or you meditate on something impersonal or very limited like that, you will not, in fact, in one sense, you will increase your attraction to the material world. Sometimes that happens because it's so artificial and so dry, then there is almost like a reverse reaction, an overreaction to try and enjoy the material world like that. Just like driving, when you drive around the corner, you sort of, sometimes if you, when you go around, then you've got to straighten up a little bit, but if you can overcompensate like that. I remember one time when I was driving, I used to pick apples down in the Mornington Peninsula. And we had an old army jeep that we were allowed to drive, myself and my brother, and we would drive it around the orchards, and we would see how fast we could go up the aisles because the boss was never there. And we go, it's one of those army jeeps without the top, and we go flying up the aisles, and then you'd see how quickly you could zoom up, turn into the aisle. And I remember one time I actually went flying around into the aisle, and of course I overcompensated, went straight across to the other side, and I hit this apple tree, and it just poured apples, and it literally filled up the entire jeep with apples. I hit it so hard. Sometimes there is that an overcompensating factor, that when people dryly try to give up the material world, they can come back at it twice as hard. Like that. And we see that, therefore, we're seeing that around the world with a lot of, religious institutions and yogi institutions that don't have some, real nectarian taste, that, people are, having difficulty, like that. Going back to the material world with a vengeance, like that. Srila Prabhupada was, pointing out to, his initiated disciple, Rukmini Devi Dasi, just how nice it is that we have this opportunity as devotees, that, we take prasadam, such a nice life. We take prasadam, we associate with devotees, we meditate on these pastimes that you can actually enter into, gradually, dancing and chanting every day, every day some dancing and chanting. And it's beautiful. So very, very, very wonderful. And you know, the philosophy is very satisfying. You know, the devotees don't have fears. They feel protected by Krishna. They're not in, you know, undue anxiety. Krishna is maintaining them. They're very, very nice lifetime. So, you know, we should relish these pastimes. And this is what Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually taught us how to, you know, relish these pastimes of Krishna. We should not just, you know, dryly go through the books and read them and say, oh yeah, I read that one, you know, I read another chapter today. You know, I read for 20 minutes every day, so I read my chapter, you know. You know, it should enter into the mood of these Srimad Bhagavatam. Taste, you know, taste the nectar of Srimad Bhagavatam. Once Rasikananda, who was the main disciple of Shyamananda Prabhu, who was an associate of Narottam Das Thakur and Srinivas Acharya, Rasikananda, he was, when he was very young, the pundits were discussing Srimad Bhagavatam and, you know, espousing their great knowledge of the Bhagavatam and, you know, their expertise and what have you. And they happened to be discussing the pastime of Krishna lifting the Govardhan Hill. And of course, when Rasikananda heard that, you know, immediately tears began to flow down his eyes. He began to rolling on the ground in ecstasy, you know, and ecstatic symptoms in his body. And all these so-called Srimad Bhagavatam pundits were then, you know, realizing, what do we know about Srimad Bhagavatam? You know, we, you know, what taste do we have? You know, we're supposed to be the, you know, teachers of Bhagavatam, you know. And here, you know, this is someone who understands, enters into Srimad Bhagavatam. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also, when he was in with his devotees, they would always put on plays. Many of these plays were performed with, you know, very intimate, confidential associates, because there are many confidential pastimes, and you know, they would all dress up and you know, absorb themselves in the mood of these pastimes by literally playing out in a play form. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was taking the part of Rukmini Dev, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a very, very beautiful young boy. He was very, very beautiful. And, you know, so he was taking the part of Rukmini Devi. My mother was telling me an embarrassing fact the other day. She said this to me a few times, but she said, you know, when you were a little boy, I used to dress you in girls' clothes. and she tells me that, and thanks, Mum. You know, we'll keep that one quiet. Okay? And then the other day she came up, no, really, I really did, you know. Thanks, Mum. Yeah. And I remember we had this, when I was living in Red Hill, there was a little boy who was about this big, and he used to come in, of course I've always had all girls, and he used to come in and play. But he wanted to dress up as the girls as well, so, you know, the girls would, he would always go home and, you know, with his hair and ribbons and whatever. I don't know what his mother thought, you know, but every time he came to our place, he went back home with a dress and, you know, makeup and everything like that. He was about two, but he was so cute, you know, he couldn't resist. So, but anyway, in these days, they, you know, because of the society at that stage, generally, women, you know, didn't go in plays, just out of, you know, humility and shyness. You know, not that we should do that now, because we live in a different society, different standards, and it's, you know, very nice to have women in plays. But Srila Prabhupada tells a story, of course, that, you know, just to give an idea of, you know, that's why Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was dressing up, so we have to understand the, you know, the times that, you know, in those times, you know, women just didn't go in plays in public. And Srila Prabhupada explained how he put on a play one time of the different pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and you know, they all dressed up, and one of his friends dressed up as Mother Sachi, and Prabhupada had a bit of a laugh because his friend, you know, had quite big shoulders. He was like a big masculine man, but still, you know, they put him, you know, he was like Mother Sachi, so to speak. But at the same time, he said that we weren't professionals, and Srila Prabhupada, you know, when they did this play, they also did it in the same mood as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees, that they literally tried to enter into the, you know, the mood of it, not just like a professional, you know, we're going to entertain people. You know, they did it very, very seriously. And Srila Prabhupada pointed out that, you know, it was a big audience, and when he looked out, he saw that the people were crying. You know, that there were tears rolling down their cheeks because it affected them so much. They did it, you know, so nicely. And and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course, when he was performing a play, the play of Srimati Rukmini, so he was in the dressing room, and he'd just put on the costume. So he hadn't even actually, you know, began performing the play, and just being dressed as Rukmini was enough that he just immediately entered completely into the mood of Rukmini Devi, her mood and her thoughts, and tears began, you know, rolling down his cheeks, and it's described that those tears became the ink, because he immediately wanted to write a letter to Krishna. You know, you please come and kidnap me and marry me. So those tears became the ink, and as they fell upon the ground, and the ground became the paper, and his finger became the pen. And then he quoted the same verse that Srimati Rukmini recited. And you know, all the devotees, they were in ecstasy, you know, seeing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu play this part. So, you know, that's the that's the life of a devotee. You know, as shown by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as shown by Srila Prabhupada, the devotees, they're always, you know, if they want to watch something, they want to watch something, you know, connected with these pastimes. They're so wonderful, these pastimes, that you can hear them again and again and again, and you always feel like, you know, gee, I'd like to hear that again. And, you know, they're so nectarian. This pastime here is, I really like this pastime myself, and I really like the way Srila Prabhupada tells the story in the Krishna book. And usually when I read it to myself, I always just crack out laughing, even if I'm by myself. Just some of the things that the way Prabhupada describes, you know, Rukmini, and just the pastime, you know, the way they fell off their horses and things like that. It's just, you know, as you go through the pastime, you know, these are a great warriors, you know, very proud and powerful men. But as you know, Krishna just converts them, you know, to like the caper cops or something. They're like the Three Stooges, you know. They just become these bungling fools, you know. They just can't, you know, incompetent, silly people, you know. They can't get anything together, you know. Krishna just, you know, he's just the Supreme Personality of God. He just makes them look so foolish. And there are some parts that always make me laugh. I remember one time when Indra Jumna Swami used to come to New Zealand, we used to read him a Krishna story before he went to bed, and we'd massage his feet. Very nice service. So I used to always like to read. So I was reading the Krishna story, and there were a couple of my godbrothers sitting beside me. There was a few devotees in the room, and a couple of senior devotees. And of course, I was reading this, you know, this particular pastime, and I couldn't stop laughing. And I just get to the bit where they start snipping his beard and that, and I just cracking up, and you know, my god brother's going, Ganga, you know, it's like the guru, and you know, the guru's just there, you know, Guru Dev's just there, and I couldn't stop him because you know what it's like when you're in a very serious situation and you start giggling? You just, that's it, you just lose it, you know. And the more serious the situation, the more you can't control yourself. So it was like that, so I just completely lost it. And, you know, devotees, and, you know, after a while, I couldn't, I'd read, you know, like I'd get one half a word, which didn't even sound like a word, and I'd just crack up. And you know, I looked up and everyone's just, you know, looking at me. You know, and I was like, God, get on with it, man, or pass the book or something. You know, and they're all looking at me as if, you know, boy, you have really displeased Gurudev, you know. You. And actually, Srila Gurudev was really happy. No, he's, I like him. He's really happy that, and, you know, and I took this as a very important lesson. That, you know, he didn't, you know, he was happy that, you know, he actually, you know, really enjoy these pastimes, you know, and we're not just sort of dryly sort of skipping through and, you know, like that. And so, you know, I always remember that, that, you know, that is from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, from Srila Prabhupada to, you know, my own Gurudev, you know. They're teaching us that, you know, these are such wonderful, wonderful paths. We have such a wonderful life. And we should always, you know, never do anything that can jeopardize that. Yeah. We have such a wonderful life. We're very fortunate, and we should never, we should always act in such a way in appreciation to the spiritual master, in appreciation of the Vaishnavas, in appreciation of Srila Prabhupada, in appreciation of Srimati Rukmini Dev, Srimati Radharani, and Sri Krishna, the deities like that, so that we never ever jeopardize. And, you know, if there are difficulties, then, you know, we just, you know, this advice which Jarasandha is giving for Sisipal, it applies to us especially, you know, that as Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, Matraspasas to Kuntaya, you know, that we should learn to just tolerate, you know. Prabhupada gives a very nice example. He says, if you get onto a train and it's packed with people, you have two options. It's uncomfortable and you've got to go for your journey. He says, you can try and organise everyone in that carriage so that you're happy. Or you can just tolerate. Huh? So, of course, you know, if you look at that example, you can see, okay, best thing, you just tolerate. There's no way you're going to organise. They'll throw you off the train. So, you know, we should take this advice here of, you know, Jarasandha. It applies to all of us. What to speak of the demons, and we should, you know, really appreciate the wonderful life and Krishna consciousness that we have. So does anyone have any comments or questions about any of that? You know, Krishna Gaja? Dave? Oh, okay. Jai, all goes to the Prabhupada. Thank you.